You're watching the Inside Slant on the Sports Objective Podcast. Over the next hour plus, the guys will be joined by play-by-play voices, beat writers, and other analysts from around the nation as they preview this weekend's college football action. Let us hear from you throughout the show via Facebook Live, on our YouTube channel, or on Twitter at TheSportsOBJ. Now, here are the guys.
Welcome into the Inside Slant here on the Sports Objective. I'm Dave Richmond. How are you, Bubba Rosenbaum? Welcome
in. I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. It's a Friday night, which means we're getting ready for some college football, right?
Yeah, another big weekend. A lot of big games, and one of those taking place tomorrow in the SEC, and obviously just a national game taking place down in College Station. And right now to talk about Florida taking on Texas A&M. Welcome in from the Matthews. Pot up with Matthews in the morning, Shane Matthews. Shane, we appreciate you joining us.
No problem, guys. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you on, Shane. A huge game tomorrow, I believe it's high noon, where the Gators taking on Texas A&M. What do you think about the game, and what are your thoughts?
Well, you know, it's a tough place to go play. It's a dicey game, in my opinion, for us. I think Florida's going to find a way to win it, but I think it's going to be much closer than people expect. I think A&M kind of has their backs against the wall right now. They get blown out against Alabama. A lot of people had high expectations for this A&M team this year. And they need to beat a team like a Florida, an Alabama, or an LSU, and Jimbo hasn't been able to do that. So I'm a little concerned about this game. But I think Florida will find a way to pull it out in a close victory.
Welcome in, co-host Kyle Barber, coming to us from the high country, Boone, North Carolina. Kyle, how are you?
What's going on, guys? I'm out of my normal element down east up here in the hills, but it's a beautiful day up here in Appalachian State territory.
As you join us, and as you see there on the screen, Kyle, we're talking with Shane Matthews of Pot Up with Matthews in the morning about the Florida-Texas A&M game tomorrow. Should be a tremendous game. I'm really interested to see on this Florida passing attack going against the Texas A&M defense.
Yeah, absolutely. Florida really seems to have their offense humming this year, Shane. I mean, I've stepped in here kind of midway of the conversation. I don't want to, you know, chew our gum twice here, but you got to like your chances tomorrow against the Aggies.
I do, but I think it's going to be a dogfight. I really do. I think A&M is by far the best team Florida's faced so far. Good win against Ole Miss 2 weeks ago, but us four guys here, four on Ole Miss right now at our age, they can't stop anybody. They have one of the worst defenses I've ever seen in division football. And then last week, Florida played pretty well in South Carolina. Offense is playing well. There's some question marks on the defensive side of the ball. I've been concerned ever since they started training camp about our defensive line. We can't really pressure or get any type of push from our D-line unless we blitz. So we will definitely be tested tomorrow in College Station.
Now, do you think – I don't want to – you know, you may not want to say until you play them, but watching Ole Miss for two games, their offense performed relatively well against Florida and then obviously performed great against Kentucky. Do you think A&M's offense is better than Ole Miss? I mean, their personnel is probably better.
Their personnel, you're right. I think their style of play with the tempo that they throw at you can cause problems. You know, it keeps you in certain defenses, and that's what they do so well at Ole Miss. And Matt Corral is playing at a very high level. I mean, when you look at, you know, Trask has played great, but I want to say Trask is third in the SEC in passing right now. He leads in touchdowns, but when it comes to completion percentage, yards per attempt, quarterback rating, It's Matt Corral and Mac Jones from Alabama. But I do like what Florida's doing on offense, very explosive, and we got one of the best players in the country in Kyle Pitts.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Shane.
We got Sunhalter now, Bubba?
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Kyle.
Have we got Sunhalter joining us now? Or?
We do. Welcome into the show. I didn't know if you were going to be able to join us tonight, Kyle, but glad you were. Welcome in our other co-host, Jay Sonhalter. Jay, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me. Shane, great to talk with you.
Same here.
But My question, Shane, was going to be this, and that is, you talk about the Gators' offense and Kyle Trask and doing such a tremendous job, 10 touchdown passes in two games thus far, completing well over 70% of his passes. So as a former quarterback and also as a coach, just talk about everything that you see from Kyle Trask and this Gators' passing attack.
Well, his story is amazing, honestly, when you think about it. You know, if you're not a Gator fan, you may not know his story. He was a backup in high school behind De'Eriq King, actually, who now is the Miami quarterback. He only got two offers coming out of high school. He came to a camp here at the University of Florida when Jim McElwain was the coach. Doug Nussmeier was the coordinator, and they offered him a scholarship. The only other scholarship he had was to Dallas Baptist University, and they're not even Division One. So he's got his opportunity and took full advantage of it last year when Felipe Franks went down. But he's smart. He's accurate. He understands what Dan Mullen's trying to do. And, you know, he trusts his receivers. You know, there's always when you sit here and you watch it, and I watch quarterbacks a little bit different. You know, he's thrown 10 touchdowns, but about four of them, maybe three or four of them, it's like you probably shouldn't have thrown those, you know, in a double or triple coverage. But our guys have come down with those balls. So he has that ability of being he's very accurate, actually. But he trusts his teammates, and he's a great leader. And like I said, it's a phenomenal story because he wasn't a highly touted player.
You said he had all from Dallas Baptist. I didn't even know they had a football program. I'm very familiar with their baseball program. They're a power in baseball, but I honestly didn't know they played football.
Well,
was it DBU or was it Houston Baptist, maybe?
Oh, it was either Houston Baptist or Dallas Baptist.
I bet you it was Houston Baptist.
Right. I don't know if Dallas Baptist plays football either. So it was one. Regardless, he only had one Division I offer.
And speaking of Houston Baptist, not to get off on a tangent, but they've absolutely they're giving up a ton of points, but they're throwing it all over the yard, lighting up Texas Tech, Louisiana Tech, et cetera.
Yeah, they got pretty good quarterback there that some people think he'll be happy.
Shane, I was going to ask you about Dan Mullen. Like him a lot as a coach, moving from obviously Mississippi State to Florida. He has the Gators back, and I know you guys are used to double-digit wins. Contention in the East, obviously, to win that and the SEC, and obviously to have a chance at a SEC title. How close do you think you guys are to win the SEC again?
I think we're very close. I think we have an opportunity this year. You know, this is only year three for Dan. He understands the Florida football program being here as an offensive coordinator when Urban was here. We're very close. We got to find a way to beat Georgia this year. Well, obviously, got to find a way to beat Texas A&M first. You know, it's the old coaches coach speak, win game at a time. But I think, you know, most people think the Florida-Georgia game is going to come down to who goes to Atlanta to probably play Alabama. But he's got us back in contention and being relevant. I mean, we're in the top five in the country right now, and I think we will stay there as long as Dan is our head coach.
Yeah, growing up, being you know, born in 1980, kind of consider myself a 90s kid, at least a 90s teenager, I remember the SEC East being the dominant force in the SEC for so long, and the power of you know, the shift of power to the West, where the West has dominated the SEC and the East has been, quote-unquote, down for so long. That seems to be shifting a little with Georgia obviously being what they've been here recently, and now Florida is on their way back up, and Tennessee is on their way back up, and South Carolina's got a competitive football team. And Kentucky, yeah, Kentucky's not bad.
Well, Kentucky, they're a very good football team. They actually should be 2-0 in my opinion, but they find ways to lose games. It's crazy how they lose games. But you're right. I think the East is coming back. You know, when I played I played the first year they went to the East and the West, and, you know, Alabama won the national title that year, but, you know, in the 90s, it was pretty much the East, you know, with Spurrier kind of dominating the league, but it's shifted. But I think, you know, Florida and Georgia are right up there with Alabama right now. LSU obviously was tremendous last year, lost so many great players, and they will be back. But it's a good conference. It's the best conference in all of the country. And it's fun to watch it week in and week out.
Shane, I have a question about Kyle Pitts. He's the best tight end in the country. How good do you think he's going to be, you know, at the next level? And then what do you think that combination with Trask and him can really do to really solve all these good defenses in the SEC?
Well, their combination right now, I mean, I guess what, of this 10 touchdowns, six of them have gone to Kyle Pitts. He's a huge mismatch, and he's got, you know, he's about 6'5"-ish, about 235, 240, can run. But the great thing about Kyle Pitts is he's got great body control and great ball skills and great hands. He's made some phenomenal catches so far this year. He is the best tight end slash probably receiver in the country, honestly. And he will be a first-round draft pick. I'm anxious to see how his game is going to transition to the next level. We don't use him to block very often. He didn't really put his hand on the ground much. So that's something that he'll probably have to work on at the next level. But in the meantime, you know, Dan Mullen loves to split him out to the single receiver side and get huge mismatches.
Jay, how would you compare Pitts to you when you were playing? Is he just a hair better than Sonny in his prime? Or
he's very reminiscent. I was probably faster.
You think you're faster?
Could jump higher. But yeah, Shane, actually Noah Brindise was my offensive coordinator.
Oh, yeah?
For a year. And then Jerry Odom, I don't know if you knew him from playing at Florida. He was our linebacker coach.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, Jerry Odom. I talked to him the other day. He was on my podcast. You know, he's the head coach at Tusculum.
At Tusculum, yeah.
And I had him on because, you know, I don't think anybody in the country can play defense anymore. I think Georgia's defense is the best in the country, but the 20-17 games in college football are over with. It's just so hard to keep people under 20 or 25 points because of the way the offenses are. And so I had Jerry on talking about, you know, how difficult it is when teams go tempo, when teams do RPOs, how it just puts the defense in a conflict of interest. And that's why you're seeing all these high-scoring games.
Shane, if you want to see a 20-17 ball game, tune into the East Carolina USF game Saturday night on ESPN Plus. because of terrible offense.
The ECU puts up points.
Well, you know, we put up 29 points last week and didn't score an offensive touchdown.
Really?
Really? Yes, we scored off special teams and defense.
That's correct.
Yes, it is. If you'd have told me we'd have put up 29 points non-offensively, I'd have said we won the football game. It didn't happen.
I don't know if I ever heard of that. That's a lot of points.
It is.
For your offense not to score.
And that's exactly what happened. Block punt, fake field goal, three field goals. What was it, guys? Block punt.
And a pick six. Pick six at the beginning.
Pick six and two field goals.
That's interesting.
Yeah, crazy. One of our viewers, Ron James, is chiming in from Hattiesburg, Mississippi. He was talking about you being a native Mississippian as well, saying that you and Terrell Buckley both played for Pascagoula.
We sure did. Yeah, it's you know, a lot of people think our state championship team was the best ever in the state of Mississippi, and I'd have to agree with them, but. Mississippi played some good football on Friday nights, man.
And he also had a question for you. He wanted me to ask, what do you think of Todd Munkin, on Georgia's staff and how he's impacting the Bulldogs' offense?
Well, I like what they're doing more now than what they did under Jake Fromm. And let me tell you, Stetson? I can't remember. But he's a really good player, man. I the former walk-on who's now on scholarship, this is where you can take all those stars and throw them out the window because I've seen five stars. Well, the Mathis kid who started for them against who was at Arkansas, he can't play quarterback in this league, in my opinion. You throw in Stetson Bennett, and, man, that guy has a feel for the game you can't teach. He's extremely accurate, knows where to go with the football. I just love his story. I think he's going to be Georgia's quarterback all year long, and I think they're fine with him.
Speaking of offense, and you mentioned Arkansas, which made me think of Mississippi State. How do you think Mike Leach is going to do in this league as the year goes on? Obviously, week one, they manned him up, and the quarterback was able to hit some big plays against LSU. But then last week, Arkansas played a solid zone defense and kept everything in front of them and tackled. So how do you think that's going to progress as the year goes on?
I think you're going to see a lot of people play what Barry Odom threw at them, and that's what the University of Washington used to do out there. He could never beat the Huskies. I love Leach's offense. I do think he needs to tweak a little bit of it, you know, to be able to run the football when you need to. But he's kind of hard-headed now. He's going to do his thing. It's fun to watch. I'm anxious to see how they bounce back. You know, I think Colin Hill only played early in that game last week. He's supposed to be back against Kentucky for tomorrow, which, you know, he's one of the best players in the league. But it's great for the SEC to have Mike. I like his system. He may have to tweak it a little bit, but we'll see how it goes this year.
Shane, speaking of Mississippi as well, Magnolia State, what about Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss, being that you're a Mississippi native?
Well, you know, I grew up a Mississippi Ole Miss fan. My dad played there, so I was a Rebel. I still have a little soft heart for the Rebels. I think Lane's a perfect hire for them. He's kind of brought that swagger to Ole Miss. You never know what he's going to say in his press conferences. And Ole Miss is a fun team to watch. But again, they're going to, if the weather is, even if it's raining tomorrow in that Alabama game, I firmly believe Alabama could score over 60 points. You know, they gave up, Ole Miss gave up over 400 yards passing to the Gators in week one. They give up over 400 yards rushing to the Kentucky Wildcats. Now you got the most complete team, both offense and defense, probably in the league, coming to your ballpark. And I just don't see how they can slow down Alabama at all. Now, I think they'll score, you know, they'll score a few touchdowns themselves, but I just think Alabama can do whatever they want to do offensively.
And Shane, like,
Ole Miss defense problem of the personnel.
What's that again?
I said, is Ole Miss's defensive problems more personnel scheme or a combination of the two?
At times against Florida, they didn't do some things that were sound, but I think it's more personnel right now. But I don't. They're going to give up over 35 points every game they play. Is my prediction this year.
Man, that sounds like East Carolina.
Shane, when you look at all these coaching staffs in the SEC. And we all know, you know, the SEC probably or definitely does have the best coaches in the country. But then you look at the assistants, too, and kind of the staff that all these schools have and big-name coaches. What's the biggest difference between a Florida, LSU, you know, an Alabama, Auburn, you know, whoever wins it this year? Is it that they maybe have more talent? Is it the coaching? Or is it just the tradition? Or what's going to be the biggest difference between who wins the SEC this year?
Oh, gosh, it's going to be obviously, I think, there, as you mentioned, there are a lot of coaches in the SEC, but, you know, there's a handful of teams that are going to win the SEC every year, in my opinion. When you look at the East, it's two teams. It's Florida and Georgia. You look at the West, it's really only two teams over there, in my opinion, LSU and Alabama. You know, you can throw Auburn in there if you want. You know, every now and then, maybe Tennessee can come back. We'll see what Tennessee is all about tomorrow. I think they're going to get just shredded by Georgia personally. But those are the guys that are going to be winning, playing for the SEC title every year, in my opinion. Every now and then you may get somebody sneak in there, but year in, year out, it's going to be those four teams.
While we're just talking about the SEC as a whole,
I mentioned what I saw earlier
and what they did in Mississippi State. And I absolutely love Arkansas staff. I've been a big Kendall Briles fan for a while. So excited to see what we can do in the SEC. Got some feedback coming from somewhere.
Yeah. But you were talking about the Arkansas staff. I think Sam Pittman was a great guy.
Yeah, Kendall Briles.
Did you ask about Kendall Briles?
I did.
Yeah. Good offensive mind. You know, they got the former Florida quarterback, Felipe Franks, who has a ton of talent. I'm anxious to see. That was a great win for Arkansas, but I'm anxious to see how they play at Auburn coming off that their first win in, what, shoot, 2 or 3 years in the conference. I think they're going to keep that game close, and it would not surprise me if they beat Auburn. I'm just not impressed with Auburn. I think they're okay defensively. Offensively, they're horrible. I don't know what they're trying to do offensively. Bo Nix, I'm not sure he can be an everyday starter in the SEC. A quarterback's job is to drop back, make a decision, and let the ball go. He likes to drop back and run around, leave the pocket way too often, too fast. So tomorrow's Arkansas-Auburn game will be interesting.
I agree. You also got any other game?
No, Shane, we appreciate your time. Appreciate you coming on. And as the college football season progresses, we'd love to have you back on down the road.
Absolutely, guys. Enjoyed it. Appreciate it. Y'all have a good night.
And very quickly, Shane, before we let you go, go ahead and plug your podcast.
Yeah, it's on Facebook Live. It's called Pot Up with Matthews in the Morning. It's Monday through Friday. You can also check it out on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts. But yeah, we have a lot of good guests on, and have a good time doing it.
Shane, thank you so much for coming on. Appreciate it, man, and good luck to the Gators tomorrow.
Appreciate it, guys. Take care.
All right, that's Shane Matthews. Yeah, obviously, a great podcast, and guys, Bubba, you turned me on to that.
Trying to figure out where the feedback's coming from, if it's from my end or what, because it was when I was talking. I don't hear it now, though.
All right, guys, I know we have – are we ready to go to our next guest?
Yeah, welcome back to the program. We've had this guy on several times already this season. Senior writer at the Clemson Insider, Will Vandervoort. Will, how are you?
How about it now? There we go.
There we go.
I had two mute buttons on. You got me?
Hey, Will, how are you, man?
Got you.
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. Thanks for having me. Good to be here again.
Absolutely, Clemson. Rolling right along. We wanted to have you back on to talk about this week's matchup.
Yeah, it's going to be a good one. 7:30 in the Valley, ABC, if you're watching on TV. It's going to be a downpour, it looks like, with Hurricane Delta coming through, obviously hitting the Louisiana area, and it's going to make its way into Clemson right around kickoff, it looks like. So it's going to be good. It's going to be nice and wet. It's probably going to play a big role in this game, I think, like it did the Notre Dame game a few years ago. It'll be interesting to see how each team handles it. They both got to play in it. It's going to be interesting to see how they handle it. It's definitely something that during the course of the week, as you're breaking down this game, that you really didn't think about. But now that it's here, it's I know the coaches got to really, really be thinking about how they're going to, you know, call this game tomorrow night.
Well, obviously, everybody has given Miami a lot of attention. Are they back? Are they for real? This will kind of tell the tale. I think they're probably pretty good. I just think that Clemson's personnel and the depth of personnel is just too much for anybody to handle in the ACC.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're a good football team. I do. I think they're a little different. I think this is a better team, at least from a personnel standpoint, and I think schematically than they were a couple years ago when they went to the ACC championship game and started off the season 10-0 before being upset by Pittsburgh. So I think overall this is a better team. I think that defense was better that year, but they were just so bad on offense that season. I mean, it wasn't even close to being a fight when they played Clemson from an offensive standpoint. And that's going to be a little different this year. Couple reasons. A, they're better. I like their schematics. I like Derek King at quarterback. I think they're tight ends with Brevin Jordan and Will Mallory are a matchup nightmare for Clemson. I like the running back Cam Harris if they can run the football. But for Clemson, I think, they're a young defense, a very talented defense, but they're still young, and so they're going to make mistakes. And you know, under Lashley, you know, what is, you know, that offense as Clemson looks at it, and they, you know, what do their eyes do? Eye discipline is very important in this game for Clemson, because he's going to have his guys moving everywhere. There's all kinds of motions. There's things happening behind the quarterback, you know. So how do these young players view it, and how do they make sure that they have their eyes in the right place? It's going to be very important for Clemson's defense. So I think from a talent standpoint, yeah, I think Clemson is still way ahead of Miami overall talent. But there's some things that Miami can do schematically that right now with where Clemson is at with their young defense that could cause some trouble. When you flip it to the other side, you know, I still think Clemson's got an edge over there because of the experience at quarterback and running back. I think Clemson's offensive line is a very good offensive line. And, you know, a lot of people look at last week's game and think they struggled, but, you know, they didn't really struggle as much as the way Virginia schemed things up against them. And Miami's not going to do that. That's not who they are. So Clemson's actually, I think you're going to see a more productive offensive line because they're not having to worry about, you know, is this corner going to come off on a zone blitz on us? You know, what's this safety doing over here? Miami doesn't do any of those things. They kind of just line up and come at you. So that's going to be a little bit easier for the offensive line. But I think overall Clemson's offensive lines look good for the most part this year. You know, teams are just loading the box, daring them to beat them with the pass. And, of course, Trevor Lawrence can do that, and those wide receivers can do that. But I think that's the poison that defenses are picking right now. And I look for Miami probably to do the same thing, you know, especially if it's going to be a wet field and the ball's got to be put in the air. You know, you like your chances better in those situations. So I can see Miami loading up the box and daring Clemson to throw it. So it'll be interesting to see. But I think Clemson is still ahead, but Miami's closed the gap a little bit, I think. And I think tomorrow night they'll prove they're a top 15 team. I think they're going to hang with Clemson for a little while.
How heavy is the rain supposed to be in Death Valley tomorrow?
Say that again.
How heavy is the rain supposed to be at game time?
Well, you know, there's different scenarios. We've heard one where it's going to be 80% chance of rain and maybe a half inch to an inch. Then I've heard other scenarios where it's going to be 100% chance of rain with thunderstorms with about 3 to 5 inches of rain. So, you know, it's you don't know what's going to happen. I think the latest model shows more on the heavier side, more with the thunderstorms and the torrential downpours. I think, you know, that's kind of what we're going to see tomorrow night in the Valley.
Yeah, I could just picture De'Aaron King being a nightmare in the rain, running around, making plays, kind of just doing backyard football.
Yeah, this is going to be a mutter kind of game, you know. I think when you look at this game, I like that. I think for Clemson, it's probably better that this game's in the rain. And the reason I say that is because, as I mentioned earlier, with what Rhett Lashley likes to do and move guys around, that's the offensive coordinator for Miami. He likes to move guys around and do all different things. It's going to be harder to do when it's a wet field. And so, you know, you can have some issues, some guys not get lined up fast enough because they can't, you know, it could cause delayed game penalties. There's all kinds of things it can cause. I could see the rain causing him to have to limit that a little bit. And that's going to help that young Clemson defense because, you know, they're not going to have to worry about seeing all these things that they've been talking about in practice. They're just going to get to line up and play ball. And if they can, Clemson can get it to that kind of game, then game on, because Miami's offensive line will not be able to block Clemson's defensive line. If it's just a straight up, they're going to have to do regular pass blocking and regular run blocking. If that's the case, Clemson's going to be in the backfield all night, and it's going to be difficult for Mr. King.
Well, how big of a worry is it that Clemson's just been so dominating? And I know the game last week was, you know, wasn't a blowout, but this is going to be, you know, we think a closer ball game. Uh-huh. Is there any concern just with all these young players and the first big test for them?
Any concern on the Clemson end?
Yeah.
No, and the reason I say that is because, yeah, there's some young guys that will be playing, but Clemson's got good leadership in the places you need it. Quarterback, they got veteran players in leadership at quarterback, running back, wide receiver with Amari Rodgers. On the defense, you look at, you know, in the middle of that defensive line, you got Niles Pinckney and Jordan Williams, both juniors, redshirt juniors and seniors there. You got James Kowski, a fifth-year senior at middle linebacker. You know, you got even at linebacker with Baylen Specter. It's his first year, but it's his fourth year in the program. So, you know, he's been on the stage and played. And then you got Nolan Turner on the back end and Darion Kendrick also at corner. So you got guys in place that have played for 3 or 4 years at every major position. Even on the offensive line, you got a Matt Bockhorst who's been in, you know, at left guard, who's been in the program 4 years. You got, you know, at left tackle, you got Jackson Carman who's been in the program 3 years. And so there's somebody there at every position that helps them kind of like have that leadership that they need. And so I think that will probably ease it a little bit for some of those young guys. So I think, you know, when you look at that standpoint of it, I think more it's more Miami that has the concern from that standpoint, because they've never played in this kind of situation. You know, they haven't played on a stage like this where, you know, they're number seven in the country. And, you know, everybody said, well, 3 years ago they played Clemson in the ACC championship game. Yeah, but a lot of those guys on that team are gone, and they only did it one time. And it's not like they were doing it over and over again like Clemson has with their program. And Miami doesn't even have really the same coaching staff in place at that point. So just I think all that kind of those intangibles favor Clemson more than they do Miami, you know. But how much of that is going to be the football game? We'll find out. That may be a little bit of the problems leading up to the game. But once – I've had a coach tell me this 100 times. Once they kick the ball off and you get that first play in, that first hit, then after that, it's just football. And it's like just who's the best team or who's playing the best at that point. All that other stuff kind of goes out the window after that.
And, Will, for me, when you're talking about Miami, Miami is definitely better. They're definitely improved, but better is not going to beat Clemson tomorrow night.
Yeah, they're going to have to play well. If Clemson plays well and Miami plays well, Clemson will win the game because Clemson's dudes are just better than their dudes, and that's just a fact. Miami's just not there yet from a personnel standpoint where Clemson is. And that's like not, you know, that's talking about every position all the way down. You know, there's some areas Miami does have some better players, but when you look at the overall depth and experience of the rosters, Clemson is, you know, deeper than Miami at this point. So, yeah, I agree with you on that. If Clemson, though, doesn't play a good game and Miami plays a good game, Miami could win that game. We saw that last week against Virginia where, you know, there was times where Clemson had some lapses and they just didn't look good. And Virginia was able to do some things. And there were some missed tackles and things of that nature that Virginia took advantage of. And, you know, because Virginia's a pretty darn good football team, and they're going to prove that through the course of the year that they're better than what people probably think they are. And so Miami, I think, is a little bit better football team than Virginia. And I think, you know, if Clemson plays that way in this game, they're going to get hurt a little bit more because they do have a De'Arik King. They do have a Brevin Jordan. They do have some outstanding defensive ends on that defensive side of the ball. They do have a darn good safety that Clemson is really concerned about. So there's some good players on that team that if Clemson doesn't play well, it could affect the outcome of the ball game.
Yeah, no doubt. And is this an ABC game? I don't even know. Is it ABC or ESPN?
ABC 7:30. This is the game of the week. I guess that's how they. So it's the primetime ABC game. College Game Day will be here tomorrow. As whatever it is, you know, with going on with COVID right now, it's not the same College Game Day as it normally would. So that's going to be interesting what they do there and what that looks like. But it's still going to have a little bit of an atmosphere to it. One thing I'll say, even with 19,000 people, Clemson fans are still pretty loud. Didn't have to use that sound thing that the ACC allows them to use. Didn't have to use that hardly at all, to be honest with you. In the way Clemson spaces it out throughout the stadium, they did a really good job of doing that. So it looks like there's more people in the stadium than 19,000. So it'll be interesting. It's not the same because of what's going on with COVID and all, but it'll still be a good environment, good atmosphere, you know, as you can have for this type of world we're living in right now. Should be fun.
19,000 people in 2020 standards. That's like 100,000. I don't even know what, you know, that'll just be a huge roar. Right? So many people have gotten used to hearing no fans or a handful of fans.
Yeah, 19,000 is a good crowd. They've had some, you know, like last week, especially on third downs and stuff. You could hear, you know, it wasn't as loud as Death Valley is with 80,000, but it was still loud. You know, I'll make an argument; it's louder than some ACC stadiums that are full during a non-pandemic year. The 19,000 were when there was key third downs last week in that Virginia game. So, you know, Clemson fans, they get after it and they like to get loud when they can. And that was definitely the case last week. It's definitely going to be the case this week. And the funny thing about it, you know, some people are like, oh, you know, they won't go to the games and stuff like that if it's raining. I remember that Notre Dame game 5 years ago when it was just a downpour, torrential downpour, and they were sitting on top of this tropical system was sitting right on top of Clemson, and it rained, guys. I'm not lying. It rained the entire game, like, you know, the heaviest rain you can think of. I mean, I've never seen anything like it. And it just was constant. And I think there was like over 10 inches of rain in the Clemson area that night. There was flash flooding everywhere. And, you know, they played that game, and I just remember how it just rained so hard, but yet not one single person left the stadium. There was 83,000 people there sitting in that kind of rain the entire game. It was amazing. So knowing Clemson fans, the 19,000 that have tickets, they'll probably stay the entire game, and they'll make it fun.
Was that 2015?
That was the 2015 Notre Dame game, yeah.
Yeah, I believe we played Virginia Tech and upset them in we being East Carolina, upset Virginia Tech in Greenville the same day. I think you guys got around 10 inches of rain, and we got around 4 or 5. And that was a fun day.
It was. It was. You know, look, I'm not one of these. I'm old school, man. I don't like this all pitch and catch where they spread you out. And you know, I'm as you can see on my shirt here, I'm a Pittsburgh Steeler, and you know, we're all about just knocking the head off the guy, and you know, playing that tough, dirty, gritty kind of football. And you know, so I loved that game. That was fun in the mud, you know, hard hitting, physical. It was football. That's what football's made to be. This stuff that these young kids see today with them teams like having these ping pong kind of games or these PlayStation kind of games, video scores of 64 to 48 and stuff like that. Man, I hate it. A couple of years ago, Clemson played NC State in a game of 62 to 48, I believe. And I went down into the press room and Coach Venables, me and him talk defense from time to time. And, you know, he came in there and he looked at me and he says, "Will, I hate days like this. I just hate it. You know, we can't have days like this." And I laughed at him. I said, "I'm with you, Coach. It's horrible." He's, you know, he was just miserable because of the way his defense gave up 48 points and all those yards. So fast forward to 2017 and they play Auburn in Death Valley. And the final score of that game, guys, was 14-6. And Coach Venables walks in the room, sees me, taps me on the shoulder and says, "How'd you like that game there, Will? Did you like that one?" I said, "Yeah, Coach, I love that one. That's my kind of football there." And he's like, "Ain't that right?" You know, because that's what you like. You know, that's what football's supposed to be, in my opinion. It's supposed to be low scoring. Defense is doing it. You're playing that chess match to see who can make the best moves. So that this video game stuff that people like to play, I'm not a big fan of it. So, you know, I'm looking forward to tomorrow night because I think it's going to be a lower scoring game than people think. You got two very good offenses, don't get me wrong, but I think you got two pretty good defenses, and then when you throw in the rain on top of it, I think it's going to make it even more difficult for teams to score.
All right, Will, we appreciate you coming on, man, tonight, and how can people find your stuff?
Yeah, they can find me at theclemsoninsider.com. That's our website. It's free to anybody, so come and check it out. We'll be covering this game inside out, as we always do. You can go over there, start, you know, we're there now. We got previews and things of that nature. And then you can also find me at Steeler Will on Twitter or at Clemson Insider on Twitter. On Facebook page is The Clemson Insider Facebook page. And, of course, I have a podcast each week with former Clemson linebacker, Hall of Famer, Ring of Honor, LaVon Kirkland, who also was a Pittsburgh Steeler and played 10 years for the Steelers and 11 years in the NFL. He joins me on the podcast each week as we kind of break down each week's game and get everybody set. So they can find that at Clemson Football with LaVon Kirkland. You can get that on Spotify, Google, you know, Apple, all those places that you can get a podcast. So, you know, go check it out. Give me a download and a rating and give us a listen.
All right. Look forward to the big game tomorrow night. Clemson and Miami in the rain. Should be a great one. Old school matchup. And we'll see how it works out. Good luck to the Tigers tomorrow night.
All right, guys. Thank you very much for having me, man. We'll see you next time.
Appreciate you. All right. Bye-bye. That is going to be a big game, guys. And who knows? You have to play the games. Miami may come out with an upset. You never know.
No, absolutely. I mean, Canes have a good football team.
All right, Bubba, I know we have our next guest, another great guy that's been with us for the last couple of years, and Temple finally getting their football start, right, Bubba?
Yeah. First of all, the Houston Cougars got their first game in last night and were victorious over Tulane down in Houston. And like you said, Temple playing their first game tomorrow down in Annapolis against the Navy midshipmen. And welcome in from Al's Daily, Ryan Wallen. Ryan, how are you?
I'm doing well, guys. How are you?
Doing great. Glad to have you back. We want to get your take on the game, but before we do, I know that something Kyle's mentioned on the podcast a few times, you guys have had tough restrictions, I guess, with the state of Pennsylvania with COVID and obviously what we've all had to go through with this country, but how are things as far as that and the team? Have they been able to practice a lot? I know Navy made them, speaking of Navy, they made the mistake of not hitting, and that cost them in that BYU game for sure.
Yeah, so the city of Philadelphia, you know, up until last month, they weren't letting groups of more than, you know, a couple dozen people out on the field at the same time, and Temple was really having a tough time actually getting to go out and practice in their full offensive defensive sets. Coach Carey, actually, Rod Carey, proposed to the city a plan that he hoped would get passed. The city eventually did approve it, that the team could get out there and start practicing again. And that's part of the reason why this Navy game actually got pushed back from late September to this weekend, because Temple had a bye originally this weekend. In their non-conference slate, they were supposed to have Navy smashed in between a couple of those non-conference games. But Rod Carey had pushed this back, saying, you know, I need time to prepare my guys to get ready for this game. I need a month of practice prep time so these guys can actually go out, hit, and get used to, you know, the back in the flow of things before, you know, taking on Navy. Because I think he saw what happened at Navy. He saw that was a bad look for the midshipmen. And, you know, he didn't want his team to come out looking like that. Typically, though, Rod Carey has been a guy that historically does not like to hit in preseason camp, training camp, because he wants to limit injuries heading into the season. But he even said, you know, this season it's been a little different. He's allowed some hitting. I'm sure the guys are out there ready to play tomorrow. I saw some guys on Twitter hyping it up. They're ready to just hit people. So I think they're ready for tomorrow night.
Yeah, and you guys just now start your season. We talked about that. Houston was in a similar predicament, but for different reasons. They had a bunch of games canceled because of other teams getting COVID week after week after week, but they finally got their season started last night. That had to make you feel good that maybe the not playing and playing somebody that had played a few games didn't make any difference for the Cougs. They came out and rolled over Tulane. I'm sure you're hoping for a similar result tomorrow against Navy.
Yeah, of course. You know, so obviously the benefit has been that Temple is completely healthy coming into this game. Rod Carey has said that, you know, there is no positive COVID results. The team traveled down there today. Obviously, Houston last night, they started off a little slow, had some turnovers in the first quarter. I believe it was three in the first quarter, and that really dug them a hole. But, you know, that offense really was able to bounce back against Tulane. And obviously, Temple has an advantage, I would say, going into this Navy game based on what Navy has looked like thus far. Obviously, the game against BYU was an ugly 55-3 pounding. Then they had a miraculous comeback win against Tulane, which I don't think many people saw coming. But tomorrow, who knows what's going to be, because I think that Air Force game last week might have been a little bit of, you know, they lost some players to injury on defensive side. They didn't have their starting quarterback and Daylon Morris there last week. He did not travel out to Air Force due to having a medical condition that prevented him from playing at higher altitudes. So he is going to be obviously back this week against Temple. So obviously that was a better Navy looking offense against the Tulane in that game, in which they did win. So obviously we'll have to see what the outcome is tomorrow on the field. But I would say heading into the game, just because of obviously not having injuries and having a little more practice time before the start of the season, I think Temple probably has a good advantage coming into this.
Yeah, I did not realize their quarterback did not travel to Air Force because of altitude-related issues. That is interesting and explains a lot.
Yeah, so, you know, I would have to assume that might have been part of the reason why that triple option maybe just didn't get going. They did have, I believe their only touchdown was like a 73-yard touchdown pass. So obviously not typical for Navy, who runs the ball a large percentage of the time. But, you know, that triple option has struggled this year, even against BYU and last week against Air Force, against Tulane. It still has just not gotten going. And, you know, I believe there was a stat out there that it surrendered 935 rushing yards to opposing teams this year, while it's only put up 413 rushing yards. So that Navy offense is struggling. Their offensive line has not looked that good. Obviously, things can change from week to week. All depends on the defensive front. But, you know, Temple returns a very good interior defensive line in Ifeanyi Maije and Dan Archibong, probably two of the best defensive tackles in the American Conference. Probably both will end up playing in the NFL, be it after this year or maybe next year, depending on if they decide to take that extra year of eligibility that the NCAA granted for all players. So we'll have to see how that's going to play. Temple is a little susceptible. They do have two new starting defensive ends this year. One is a transfer from Wake Forest. Another didn't really see a lot of reps last year. So we'll definitely just have to see how they end up playing, as well as obviously the rest of the Temple defense.
Ryan, you guys are picked fifth preseason in the AAC. You know, we saw Central Florida take a step back and lose the ball game. But when you look at this league and just knowing the talent Temple has, what do you think the ceiling is and how good can they be this year?
You know, I think that if you look at the offense, they're one of the top teams offensively in the league this year. And typically, obviously, you don't think of Temple as being an offensive team. Historically, the past, you know, decade or so, they've been known for that Temple tough defense. But just the amount of talent they return on the offensive side of the ball this year, at the skill positions in quarterback Anthony Russo, top two receivers in Jaden Blue and Brandon Mack, and then at running back Ray Davis, who had an outstanding freshman year last year. You know, he almost eclipsed that 1,000-yard mark as a true freshman. Yeah, I think that definitely Temple has the skill positions down. The offensive line looks pretty solid on paper, but they just shuffled it up. We had a prediction of the offensive line going into this week, and when they released the depth chart the other day, it was completely different. So definitely going to be intrigued to see how those guys start meshing, because two of them are transfer players now coming in. So it will be interesting to see there. The defensive side of the ball, as I mentioned, they do have a very good interior defensive line. Linebackers are pretty experienced for the most part. They're the Bubo backer, which is basically their extra safety or more of the covered backer. That will be a redshirt freshman, and they are playing a new safety and some new corners in the rotation this year. So secondary probably is the most susceptible part of the Temple team right now.
Did you say Bubo backer?
It is a Bubo backer.
Bubo backer.
Yes, Bubo.
How about Michael Bublé?
There we go.
Ryan, as always, when we have you on, we wanted to ask you about recruiting. I know that I give you a chance to plug your site now and then the interview, but how are things looking on the recruiting trail this year with Coach Carey?
Well, you know, the recruiting this year, I think, started off really well. Obviously, with COVID restrictions, players have not been able to visit campus. They have obviously taken virtual visits. they are building a very solid class. I believe right now it does have the highest player ranking per player ranking on 247 in program history, which would eclipse, I believe, the 2016 class, which Matt Rhule brought in. So obviously when you're talking Matt Rhule, who is now down in your neck of the woods, down in Carolina, looks like he's building a winner down there. Obviously you're in good company if that's the case. So, just some of the guys that they've brought in, you know, Jordan Lynch, his brother, actually the former Northern Illinois Heisman finalist, his brother is committed right now to Temple's class. Obviously Rod Carey coaching at Northern had coached Jordan Lynch, while at Northern. So his younger brother from Mount Carmel High School in Chicago, Illinois, is looking like he will be the quarterback that they signed for this class. So obviously Coach Carey, very excited to have him come in. Possibly, you know, maybe he can replicate what his brother did at Northern. Obviously that's the hope. They do have some really good regional talent out of the DMV that they're signing. Looks like they're going to get a pretty highly recruited running back who had some academic off the field stuff last year, but you know, typically Temple doesn't go for those sort of guys unless they know that, you know, maybe there was something else there that spurred that on. So I trust, you know, Temple's coaching staff and what they're evaluating with these players. And they obviously have done a very good job over the last 5, 6, 7 years with signing their classes and bringing in NFL caliber talent. Cause you know, Temple has the highest number of players in the NFL for a G5 program right now. So obviously they've definitely brought in the right kind of guys. They've developed them, and it doesn't matter if they're 5 stars or 2 stars, you know, they've put them in the NFL.
And that probably has a lot to do with why Matt Rhule is coaching in the NFL right now.
Obviously. Yes, definitely. You know, Matt is a very good guy. I can't speak highly enough of him. You know, he was a very nice guy, always to the reporters, to me. So obviously I want to see him do well down in Carolina. You know, even though I might not be a Panthers fan, obviously I want to see him do well. And, you know, he signed a lot of Temple guys. And I think that just shows, you know, like that family mantra that he always praised up on North Broad as well as down at Baylor, you know, that he gives back to his players and he's loyal to them.
I do have a non-football question for you. What's the best cheesesteak in Philly? Who would you go with? Jim's?
Best cheesesteak in Philly, in my opinion, is Jim's Steaks on South Street.
Yes.
It's better, way miles above, better than Pat's and Gino's. No offense to them. I mean, I've had Pat's, Gino's. Both are all right. I have heard D'Alessandro's is good. I have not personally gotten to try it out yet. I do need to get out there. But I've heard that one and Jim's are pretty close, 1-2.
Yeah, Jim's is my favorite, but I think that's that one. I haven't had a lot, but Jim's was by far my favorite.
I agree. And just, you know, getting to see them cook it right there in front of you and just that old school vibe in that place, it's just a really nice place to go to.
No doubt about it. And certainly with Temple, it's going to be an interesting season in the American. Who else do you like in the – put you on the spot. Who else do you like in the American this year outside of Temple?
Based on what I've seen so far, I definitely would put Cincinnati up there with that elite defense that they've shown. You know, their offense is still a little suspect to me. You know, I just think Ritter has not improved enough to maybe win the league yet. He was close last year, obviously, but – He just had a sloppy game last week against South Florida, and South Florida is not a very good team. Obviously you guys are playing them this week, so that'll be a quite the battle. But I like what SMU is really doing right now. They've looked very good since that opening game, which was a lot closer than what it should have been against Texas State. But I think they've looked fairly decent and dominant. Obviously, they picked up a huge win over Memphis to put themselves in the driver's seat right now to lead the league. And I wouldn't count out UCF yet. You know, Dylan Gabriel is a phenomenal quarterback. He's still young. They still have a lot of weapons on offense. I think once they rebound from this loss to Tulsa last week, Tulsa just seems to be that team that has their number for whatever reason. As good or as bad as Tulsa usually is, that just seems to be that team that has their number. So I would say that those three right now are my favorites to be competing for that conference title. Memphis is up there still too, but just because of losing Gainwell at the beginning of the season, you know, him opting out, I think that hurt their chances. And obviously I think Temple's up there too, but I don't know if I would put them in that top tier yet.
Well, when you refer to the East Carolina-South Florida game as quite the battle, what did you mean by that?
Quite the battle in terms of I'm interested to see if Houston can get his guys going against a inexperienced head coach and a team that has played a lot of quarterbacks already this year and has also played some sloppy games. Obviously, ECU's game to Georgia State last week was – quite the shock, in my opinion, for me at least. I didn't see that one coming because I was figuring, you know, coming into the year, ECU was going to actually take a step up this year, no. Being Houston's second year as the head coach, Ehlers being an experienced starting quarterback coming in. And, you know, I thought he had potential, you know, to be a guy that could compete for league honors because he is a very talented player. He's given Temple fits. You know, they almost came back on Temple last year, and it was a scary game for some Temple fans. I know that, and but it definitely wasn't the Scotty Montgomery era. We'll put it that way with Houston last year, and but it just hasn't seemed like they've gotten clicking so far.
54 new players are big graduate transfers, freshmen, JUCOs, whatever. 54 new players on the roster. I think just a bunch of guys got to get used to playing together. And yeah, I think Holton's in his head a little bit. I think Holton just needs to play and quit pressing.
Yeah. And that'll obviously, like you said, with 54 new players, I didn't know the number, but you know, that's quite a large percentage of your team, obviously, as being new guys. So just being around one another, the dynamic might not be there, and it's still a relatively new staff to them. Obviously the staff had been together before, but it's still a new staff to players, so it that would explain it. But you know, there are definitely some games to watch this weekend. I'm looking forward to it. I'm just happy to be back covering games.
Absolutely. You guys, got anything else?
No, we're good.
All right. Well, plug, they're going to put me on the spot. I'm never good with this kind of stuff, but plug your stuff and get out of here.
All right. So you can obviously follow us on at OwlsDaily247 or OwlsDaily.com, which is the Temple 247 sports site. We have recruiting. We have previews up for tomorrow's game. A lot of VIP content up there. A lot of free content up there. If you want to check us out, obviously we have recruiting. The only Temple site that does daily coverage of the Owls every day of the year.
Hey, I got a quick question for you before you go.
Yeah.
You mean you cover recruiting so hard. I can't think of the kid's name. He was a tight end out of North Lenoir High School. He signed 2 or 3 years ago. Whatever became of him, do you have any idea who I'm talking about?
Aaron Jarman. Okay. Yes, he is listed as the number 2 tight end right now on the depth chart. I suspect he will see some playing time this year. Because Temple starting tight end from last year, Kenny Yeboah, had transferred to Ole Miss this offseason as a graduate transfer. So it is now David Martin Robinson and then Aaron Jarman as the 2 tight ends for Temple.
Yeah, I am from LaGrange, North Carolina, where North Lenoir is. How East Carolina didn't offer that kid, 2 words for you, Scotty Montgomery.
Exactly. And you know, he caught a touchdown last year. I forget if it was against Maryland or if it was against Temple's FCS opponent, Bucknell, I believe. I think it was the Bucknell game, but he did have a touchdown catch last year. That was his only catch, but it was actually during the time that it wasn't a blowout yet. So he got some substantial playing time. So I think he'll see some increased role this year.
All right, well, good deal, and we appreciate it.
Awesome. Thank you guys for having me on.
Thanks, Ryan.
All right, we'll see you next time, man.
Yep, take care.
All right. That's Ryan Wallen there with the Temple Owls, a 24/7 site. Glad to have him on again, guys. And I don't know what happened to – go ahead.
Dave, you all right? You out of breath?
Yeah. No, I'm good. I am walking now. And I
had a question.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay.
You're walking?
Yeah, I was asking you guys as far as tomorrow is concerned, what games are you going to be watching?
I'm going to watch the East Carolina South Florida game.
I know that, obviously. Other than that game, what are you going to be watching?
I'll be watching Tennessee and Georgia for sure, Clemson, Miami. I'd have to look at the schedule. Those are what comes to mind off the top of my head. Is there a big one in conference? Oh, Temple Navy. We were just talking about Temple Navy. Yeah, that's a big one in the league that I'll be checking out.
Texas Oklahoma is a big one to see who's.
Oh, yeah, the Red River Shootout. Yeah, Texas Oklahoma, absolutely.
A lot of pressure on Herman. I mean, Lincoln Riley doesn't want to lose three in a row, but Herman's got heat on him.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah, he's probably the – what do you guys say? Is he the – as far as the hot seat, would he be the number one on the number one list?
You know, I think potentially. I think Jimbo don't start winning. I think he'll be on it too. I think you're going to have both those guys, the two biggest schools in Texas, on the hot seat. But, yeah, Herman's seat has got to start. It's got to be getting hot. And, you know, if you're Texas, okay, you know, if they fire him, that's another head coach, John. I mean – Texas has got to get the hire right this time if Herman is let go at the end of this year. And it's a lot of time between now and the end of the year, but they can't afford to blow another hire.
You're right about that. I mean, what is their budget, like $235 million?
It's a lot, yeah. At one time, I guess it still is the biggest in football.
But even still, it proves that just because you have the most money doesn't mean you're going to win the championship. It helps.
Oh, it definitely helps. I mean, if they made the right hire, they'd win the championship. And the thing is, when they get the right coach in there, they'll be able to keep him. And they'll be able to give him whatever he wants, and they'll be able to keep it rolling once they do get the right. That's what – you still got to make the right hire. But once – having that money, if you make that right hire, i.e. Alabama, means you can keep him.
Yeah, you're talking about Jimbo. How much, guys, do you remember? It was a ridiculous amount of money for his contract. What was it, $7 or $8 million a year? For like a boatload, like maybe 10 years?
A lot. It was way
too Jimbo much. Fisher?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was 10 years, $70 million, I think.
Yeah, that's a lot of money. By the way, signing anybody to a 10-year contract is stupid. You're asking yourself, you're doing nothing but asking for trouble. Why anybody would sign a head coach to a 10-year contract is beyond stupid. Texas A&M is going to be regretting that.
No question about it. Bubba, you joining us? Are you back?
I am.
We've got some other interviews that we're going to release, I guess, individually and on SoundCloud and Anchor, right? And we'll do that. And then, obviously, we got a big game tomorrow. I guess you can promote our content now.
Yeah, we caught up with John Laser. Jay and I did on the play-by-play voice of the Virginia Tech Hokies, the 19th-ranked Hokies, headed to Chapel Hill and Kenan Stadium to take on No. 8, North Carolina. Should be a heck of a game. And then also earlier this afternoon, we caught up with Palmer Toms. He is with Dogs 24/7, a top 15 matchup between the Hedges tomorrow with Tennessee taking on No. 3, Georgia.
It's going to be a great, great day of college football tomorrow night. It's going to be fantastic, guys. And before we go, Jay, what do you think about the Pirates? We're going to win tomorrow?
Oh, boy. It's going to be a tough ball game. There's going to have to be massive amount of improvements, and I think they're going to come out firing. I think they're going to respond after watching the film from last week, because that was a tough game to watch last week. I'm going to go with the Pirates because I think they're going to come swinging and really fight back. But I'll tell you, if they don't win, it's really going to, you know, be trouble to win coming up here, because there's a lot of issues and a lot of young players that you know, we just haven't responded yet. So I'll say we're going to win. What do you guys think?
it could go either way. My official prediction is East Carolina 23, South Florida 17. I think we're going to get a special team score, kick some field goals, and get one offensive touchdown and find a way to win it. The trouble will be, Coach Scott's a good offensive coach. And so is Charlie Watts Jr. If South Florida's more of a victim of playing against good defenses, Notre Dame's a good defense, Cincinnati's a good defense. If their offensive minds are able to get their offense going tomorrow against our defense, their defense is good enough to keep our offense in check, and then we're going to have a problem. If they are legitimately bad on offense, then I think we can win the football game.
Yeah, we've got to – and, guys, looking at the schedule, we have Navy, you have Tulsa coming up. I mean, Navy is not Navy that we've seen, but still it's Navy. And you have Tulsa coming up. You have, obviously, Cincinnati's in there, ending the year with SMU. November is like a brutal schedule. It's like murder's row for our conference in November. So – we've got
Tulane in there. Tulane is
good, yeah.
Well, Tulane's got some questions. That score against Houston last night, it wasn't even as close as it looked. Had Houston not came out playing like a team that hadn't played a football game since last year, and started slow and turned the ball over, the only way Tulane really scored was off turnovers. So that game really could have been like 62-14. So. Tulane did have a good performance against Southern Miss. Southern Miss is very good on defense. So I'm not sold on Tulane. If you're looking for wins out there, and they do come to Greenville. But you know what? Let's see if we can't get one tomorrow night in Tampa.
Definitely. Hey, something I wanted to bring up. I mentioned this with Dave and Kyle earlier in the week. I know earlier today you and I were talking about the Georgia State game, and did you notice against Georgia State how Georgia State ran several snaps of option, and I don't think we've stopped it yet.
Jay, did you pick up on the option Georgia State was running?
Oh yeah, I saw it. We had a lot of problems last week. Like, guys, the way I view it is, like, we have a lot of issues and a lot of young players, and the defense is having a lot of trouble in the offensive line. And it's all going to be based off of improvement. Like, if we improve a lot, then we can win games. But if we don't, it's going to be very, very hard to win anything. And you would think that the team's going to improve. It's just, what's the pace going to be, and how much do we improve? And how quick can we improve, especially with that tough schedule that Dave was talking about in November?
Yeah, no, and, we got to get to South Florida first. But the thought of not being able to stop the option.
They're going to gash us.
Despite Coach Harrell saying he is really good at whiff stopping the option, not a fun thought.
Yeah. I mean, they're just going to run, like, if you're an offensive coordinator from another school, you're going to run the option. You're going to run what we can't stop until we prove that we can, and until we prove we can do it consistently. So, I just think you're right, though, Kyle, on your prediction. Like, we're going to have to get scrappy, special teams touchdown, interception, get turnovers, control the ball, protect the ball. We're going to have to win it that way. Because we can't get in shootouts. We're not good enough to get in shootouts. And we gotta slow down the ball game to stay in it.
Jay, remember that game we had down there 2 years ago where we lost 20-13 in Coach Moe's final season? I could see it being pretty reminiscent of that. And we shall see, but that 55.5 over-under looks very appealing if you are a betting man.
Yeah. The thing about South Florida, I mean, I know they were picked 12th and we were 11th, but the new coaching staff coming in, they've always had
whether they were good, whether they were ranked high or whether they weren't, they've always had athletes. Like, they've always had guys. So I expect them to be, you know, them to have talent. You know, so we're going to be going against a talented team. It's just, it's going to come down to execution and discipline.
No doubt, as the lingo, today's verbiage, you know, you hear the term dudes a lot. You know, you know South Florida is going to have some dudes and some speed, but hopefully our guys will bring their A game and play much better than they did last week in Atlanta, and we'll come out victorious because we surely need a win, and it would be very sweet for that victory to come over USF because we're 1-9 all time.
No doubt, guys. It's going to be a great one. By the way, fans, if you didn't know, ESPN Plus, so go ahead and subscribe to that tonight. 7 o'clock tomorrow night, guys. It's going to be interesting. And, of course, we'll have after the game, we'll have our Pirate playback. I think it's going to be on Sunday. We'll let you know. And then, Bubba, I want to remind folks that Sutton Young is going to be with us tomorrow to give us some reports there. He'll be there in Tampa.
Yes, yeah, Sutton's credentialed for tomorrow's game, 7 o'clock and kickoff, and so he'll be there at Raymond James Stadium, and we'll check in with him probably at least pregame and postgame, maybe halftime, but at least pregame and postgame. And we appreciate him providing coverage. He's also going to provide some pictures and video as well. So thanks to Sutton for that.
All right, should be a good one, and hopefully we can talk about a victory. I'm tired of losing, guys. Three straight, if you count Tulsa last year. So it'll be great to break that streak and get a win against South Florida, and we'll try very, very hard. Thanks to all our guests. Thank you, Jay. Appreciate you, buddy, for coming on tonight, as always.
Thanks so much.
And thank you, Kyle, vacationing in Boone. Bubba, thank you so much, as always, for putting the show together. We'll see you guys again next time. It's been the Inside Slant right here on the Sports Objective. Good night, everybody, and go Pirates.